Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Inside Track with me, Luca Allam. I'm joined today by a lady who knows a thing or two about the financial markets. She's a senior market analyst here in Dubai, and her name is Farah. Farah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm all right, actually. Yeah, there's a lot I want to talk to you about today. First of all, you're the first Lebanese female I've met who works in the markets. So is that a normal place? Are you outnumbered by men, or is there a lot of other Farahs around?
I'm seeing Dubai. A lot of female faces around.
That's good.
More and more, yes.
Was it like that when you started?
Not really. And still in the realm of financial market analysis.
Okay.
More than in the domain and different kind of departments, it's less.
So you're more on the sidelines doing all of the analysis about what's going to happen in the markets, what's going on, rather than being on the floor itself, trading left, right and center.
Yes. Or, you know, sales or support. Yes.
And you enjoy generally what you do? You love it. People don't feel comfortable when they talk about their job sometimes, because not many people love what they do. And if you do, you should just shout it out. Shout it with a lot of pride, you know?
Yeah, I love the industry. I'm not telling you it's a beautiful job to go to work every day from 9 to 5 or 10 to 6.
We're
going to
leave
whatever.
Out your employer's name.
No, I mean, like, it's not this kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. It's the raw core thing that I'm doing. I like it.
Very nice. What have you brought? You brought a mug. What's going on with this mug? You told me there's a story
around
it.
It's a useless white mug. So you told me to bring a mug that I usually use. And I don't have that.
Okay.
What I do usually, because I'm clumsy and things would just, you know, if I have the coffee, it would have been on you all over.
Okay.
So I usually just take the paper cup.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I do. I don't have. I just use it and throw it away.
Okay.
Is there a psychological thing behind it?
There probably is, and I'm not the right person to qualify on that. But next time you can bring a plastic mug. We don't judge here on the Inside Track. We do advocate for sustainability, but you can bring a plastic mug. We also prepared a little something over your shoulder. There's a cat in the middle of that picture with a bunch of other things going on. Why a cat? Why have we decided to put a cat there?
Because you believe, like, I'm a weird cat lady.
How many cats do you have?
I do have four, but I blame my husband on that.
Okay.
I just wanted one cat.
Okay.
And she passed away. Okay. And I was heartbroken.
Okay.
And I didn't want anything to do with pets anymore.
Okay.
And he just brought another one. I really loved her.
Okay.
But then they turned to four and I just can't let them go.
You mentioned your husband, so you're obviously married. Mm-hmm. How long have you been married?
Almost a year.
Almost a year. Congrats. Actually, you're newlywed.
Actually, just exactly a couple of days, it's going to be a year already.
Where's your husband from?
He is Saudi.
He's a Saudi national, Saudi? Or?
Yes.
Okay. On my show, usually I also ask my guests if there's a question they don't want to answer. They feel a little bit sensitive. They get to use a safe word. Do you have a safe word in mind?
Yeah, it's your wife's name.
You're going to use my wife's name as your safe word. Rasha, by the way. By the way, that's my safe word too. So it's a good choice. Mm. It's a good choice. So look, I want to talk to you a little bit about the state of the financial markets, not just in this region, but also in the world.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you a little bit about also your role as a woman working as a financial analyst and market analyst. And what that's sort of like and how that's evolved. And I also want to get into a bit of a predictive lens. What's going to be happening also in the future? And, you know, we spoke off camera a couple of days ago and you told me that you're very, very passionate about things and that you don't always get a platform to talk about them. Mm. Well, guess what, Farah? Today you have that chance to talk about them.
The market is collapsing. not that much. But yeah, because usually if I'm on different platforms and I'm discussing things that I actually like to discuss, but then there's some, you know, whatever the reporter wants to hear, whatever investors want to hear and just don't want to, you know.
They kind of give you a very narrow thing. Focus. Exactly. You don't have that room to.
Yes.
Well, on the Inside Track, you get all of the leverage, all of the space you need to talk about whatever you want.
Okay.
In fact, and I mentioned this to you before, we've got a bunch of questions in the bag that are specific to you. Mm-hmm. So I never ask the same question twice to any guest, and they are hopefully relevant to you, and we'll have a good conversation about that as well. So tell me, what is your view at the moment of the markets in the Middle East?
You mean the financial markets?
The financial
here in the
markets,
region? I think it's really doing well. Too many, what do we call them? Emerging markets. There's too many opportunities in them. And I feel like the landscape is changing. There's no.
In what way? How's it changing?
There's no more. I don't know how to start with this whole thing, but you know, it was always maybe the US, the middleman in any trade, anything happening, because they have the strongest weapon of all, which is their currency, the US dollar. And they could just, you know, maneuver whatever they wanted, do whatever they wanted, because they were there. And this is what we call العولمة, or globalization.
Yeah.
But now we're seeing too many other players. And the more the US use that as a weapon to create issues, not necessarily, I'm not attacking anyone, like to maybe move the world in a certain direction. Now we have other powers that they're creating.
They can't have it their own way anymore, yeah. Right? Yeah, there's other entrants are coming in and making it a little more difficult. But you're absolutely
things
right.
Things are changing in an interesting way, yeah, with emerging opportunities that maybe we're not really looking at.
Okay, your background wasn't though in finance per se, right? Yes. It was more in media, more in communication. You even started at NBC. So how did you end up sort of working where you are now as a market analyst?
I think it was boredom. I was really bored.
Thank you for being honest. Because honestly, a lot of people are, you know, I've always wanted to do this, or I got inspired by something. But I love that answer. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, like, I love also art and, you know, creating, I don't know, visual things and all of that. But when you go to the TV side, or, you know, the production in a certain way, and I don't know, I was really bored, and I felt like, okay, now if I don't change, that's what I'm going to be forever.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had the time. It was flexible. I love my experience there. But then at some point, it's just there's nothing new to bring to the table. So I continued my master's here, and I started to go to this new job that they reached out for free for 2 months, just to try to understand what it's like.
Nice.
And I already had some background with TV channels, covering the market.
Were you, to be clear, were you on TV, or were you behind the camera?
Both.
Okay.
A little bit when I'm reporting, it could be me also presenting it, also on post-production. I would do the editing. I would do the whole production from A to Z.
Do you like being on camera?
I don't mind it, especially if there's something that I know how to do it. But it's not like I like it or not. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
So I like you to take a nice picture.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
What I have to do with
a nice little smile. Yeah. So you started off in investigative journalism, right? Mm-hmm. And then you decided to sort of switch track. You did a minor in finance, I think. Right?
Yes, and I did also take some courses. Yeah. You know.
So you've been doing now this for 5 years as a market analyst. Is that right?
Yes.
Give or take. So what's been your biggest learning about yourself in the last 5 years?
That nothing is real, I shouldn't take anything seriously, and, you know, you hear people fighting and just discussing something while you can just, if you have an opinion and you really believe in it, then go make money out of it.
Yeah.
Now we have a way to do that. If you can, great. If you're wrong, then maybe you will not fight this hard for an idea that you think is right. Besides that, nothing matters. In this world, you know, in this materialistic world, internally with your friends, with your family, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything else that matters, to be honest.
What is it, the one thing that you fought for the hardest?
I don't know if I ever did.
So things, that they sort of happen, they sort of unfold? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the, if there's something really just blocking me, I would just go somewhere else and try, and whatever life take me, I would just try to enjoy it.
Okay. And Dubai was a good move for you to come here, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Even it wasn't like my choice. I was just like, I was here and I applied and I just stayed.
So what does your 9-to-5 look like, Farah?
My 9-to-5, I would open all the sources that I have, check what happened last night, what's happening today. Update the team so they would know also what's happening in the market, whether it's sales, whether it's everyone. We do that also in equity.
Is it you looking at currencies? Are you looking at inflation metrics? Are you looking at
how the market's closed, for example, stock market, how did it close? What's new in Asia? The data that's coming from different parts of the world.
So you take that information in, and then do you then make recommendations to some of your clients? I mean, how does that work?
We don't really recommend, because that's not really an ethical way to go with our clients under the license. But we really just try to, whatever idea they have, to try to master it and give them the best, you know, support they can have from what's happening in the market.
Okay.
Well, the part that I really like is when I try to check patterns, weird patterns, things that correlate and we never thought about it before. That's really
anomalies.
Amazing.
You look for the anomalies sometimes.
Sometimes they're not really anomalies. They're patterns that just keep on repeating, but we don't really look them up. Like, for example, how weather would affect gold prices.
How does
sometimes
it?
Sometimes they might affect oil more, maybe. But I mean, sometimes you would just try to look for things that are related, and are they? Like, why are the prices now just at the same level? Like, these kind of things. I don't want to dig into deep things that might...
But you have to be very, very curious as a person in order
maybe,
to do that.
Maybe, maybe. Right.
Do you have that? I mean, do people tell you that you're super curious?
Yeah.
You ask a lot of questions?
I ask. And even, like, this is why some people think I'm a gossip, but I'm really not. It's like, I like the story. I forget the names and the people, but I just really like to know how things work, how people think. You know, how they feel. So that's why I'm
It's kind of important as an analyst. You've really got to you've got to keep on asking. But it's also not just ask questions, it's asking the right type of questions.
Yeah.
So how do you know if you're asking the right type of question?
I don't know. I just try to, like, if too many questions lead to the same output or too many things leading to the same output, then maybe.
So you form a hypothesis and you sort of ask questions that will either prove or disprove. Okay, very nice. The market situation at the moment, so we're more than halfway, obviously, in 2024. Rated 1 to 10 in terms of the strength of the economy, both here in this region versus everywhere else, because from an outsider perspective, I look at Europe has got massive issues across the board. US have also got some issues, especially when it comes to things like unemployment. Asia, I know less about, and I know you're quite well informed on China. But it looks like this region, particularly in the Gulf, there's never been a better time to be in the Middle East, and mainly the Gulf, right? Would you agree or disagree with what I'm saying?
I agree. I mean, there's issues everywhere, risk and potentials.
Yeah.
The US, as you said, might have lower, or it's less fundamentally strong than we thought before. Euro, actually, the Eurozone is doing better than we expected before.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it will sustain that. But I mean, the biggest economies, Germany, their business model is just unsustainable, given that they don't have, you know, any connection now with Russia and cheap energy. I mean, I don't know how sustainable it's going to be.
I also feel bad. Germany feels to be, they're carrying everyone on their back of Europe. Literally, you know, look at the economies of France or Spain or Italy or Greece. You just feel like the Germans are literally carrying Europe right now. So if Germany collapses...
Europe's in trouble. It would be a tough one.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole Europe thing, and I understand sometimes it's because of their, how, you know, ethics are limiting them, while maybe other countries, they don't really have this limit on their production or whatever. But yeah, I don't think it's the right time to jump in now, while I have maybe China, which has its own issues, and the prices are really low. And, you know, there's too many issues with China. Maybe transparency is one of them, if you want to consider it a thing. Maybe how bad the real estate sector was. But then you have crazy things they're doing. I think crazy things.
Like what?
For watch those out from China.
In what way?
And creating really good allies. Either Africa, either here, either Russia. I mean, they have really good potential markets. So that's why I'm interested in what they have to bring to the table. And they have the production capacity, cheap currency, less restrictions. In case
they just want to make money. They just want to make money.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about US currency, US dollar being a bit of a weapon.
Isn't it?
Don't you think? I mean, it is. I mean, but the word weapon is a strong word. Why do you use that word when describing the US?
I mean, what is a weapon? A way to scare people or
cause
use it
harm.
To terminate
cause
them?
Harm. You use a weapon to cause harm, right? So if you have a gun as a weapon, a knife as a weapon, they're there to hurt something else or someone
else. Or to scare them. Yeah, and that's what they do, don't they?
So how are they doing? In your opinion, how are they doing it?
They did it in a crazy way. In a crazy way. I don't know, maybe some people know about it. I don't know if you have any questions also about it. You know that... Back in the days, and even if you ask our parents, they would tell you, currencies, they're backed by gold.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that?
I have, yeah.
And that's what too many people believe, even in Lebanon, given the situation that we've been through. Like, the currency is backed by gold, nothing's going to happen. But then they had this war in Vietnam, and this Vietnamese guys are really just tough people. They just wouldn't lose.
Yeah.
And then they spent a lot of money while... All the gold from different countries after the World War, they were in the U.S. And the U.S. just created this paper and they'd give it to France, give it to Switzerland. And they told them, you have your gold. It's safe. and here's the paper that tells you that you have it, which is the bill, the dollar bill. And then when France asked for their gold, it disappeared because they used it to finance the war in Vietnam. So they were using other people's gold. And now when they're asking for their gold back, there's no gold left. So there's one thing. And imagine, this is like a bad situation the US is in. It turned to the perfect situation for them because they told them, you know what? You either decide that this paper makes sense and is enough for you to believe that I owe you $10, or you have nothing and just accept it or not. Up to you.
Yeah.
So they had to accept a paper as a thing, as a store of value.
As a tangible proof that they have value.
Yeah. And they just print as much as they can. If they have any loan, they can just print more and more currency and cover this loan.
Yeah.
And no other country can do that with no consequences.
Well, hyperinflation, if you keep printing, you just create inflation.
Yes, but they can get away with it way more than other countries.
Yeah. When you when you talk now about the markets and the economy and the financial situations, do you surprise yourself sometimes because you didn't come from that background? And do you have a different point of view because you weren't someone who, from an early age, wanted to get into this? So you have much more of a layman's perspective. You have much more of a, you know...
Honestly, it's a thing I'm always interested in. Even since school, like, everybody thought that I was going to do economics. I had really good grades with that and I really loved it. And but no, I don't surprise myself, my interest in that, because it's something that's been always there.
Okay.
And I'm glad I'm back to that. But it's, I think it gave me a bit more different perspective, that I had different backgrounds as well. So more, I don't know, malleable, more
accepting
to have a creative input in whatever I'm reading. And this is why I think a bit.
So you're different. Taking a bit of influence from here, a bit from there, and that helps you form sort of a different opinion.
Yeah, and I have, I think, a different perspective on things.
I want to get into some questions because I've got a bunch of questions in here that I think are really thought-provoking, and hopefully we'll find some good insights off the back of it.
Data or intuition? What's a better market predictor?
Okay, so when you're looking at the markets, you're looking at these trends, is it more important to look at the data and what it's saying, or is it to look at the context and sort of your intuition on why things are the way they are? What's a better predictor of market trends?
I'm going to go with intuition, but I'll tell you why. Because data is sometimes just too much. Too much data. And sometimes there's just like, for example, consumer confidence. If I want to check if the market is doing good, then I'm going to check the consumer confidence that's telling me that, yeah, it's doing great. People are consuming. But then again, if I want to check what's happening on the loan market, the loans are reaching their peak and people are not really able to cover their loans. So... yeah, the consumption is good because it was supported in an artificial way.
People are getting stuff they can't afford.
Yeah. So sometimes I might see something and just like, it doesn't seem sustainable. Something's just telling me it doesn't seem. And then I need to look for things. I think intuition is basically your subconscious analyzing data faster than you can. So that's why I would take it also into consideration. That's probably it. But it's not like I would sit and, you know, let my intuition guide me.
So do you feel like the more life experience you have, the better you are as a market analyst?
Yes.
Okay.
Not in my life in general, just the more I witness how the markets reacted in a year after a year.
Then you have more of a sample size, you're more to understand the sort of trends. How, and is that, if I was to ask all the other market analysts, how would they respond? Would they say the same thing?
I don't know, man.
I don't know either, man.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting question to ask.
All right, let's do another one. That's a nice warm up.
Okay,
nice
where warm-up. Should I?
Shove it on the table. Don't worry, it's not going to go anywhere. It's my golf ball. Do you ever play golf?
No, it's a pretentious.
It's a pretentious sport. A board. I've never really met many Lebanese who like playing golf. I think it's just not one of those sports where. You know, you grow up around. It's either basketball or football or whatever. Yeah. But in the UK, golf is golf. It's great.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's not pretentious?
No.
You're
fresh,
not playing
fresh,
it because you like to look a certain way? Like
what? Have you seen the golf outfits and how bad they are?
I know.
They put up they wear these shorts, they put up these socks. No, it's not. You don't play golf to look good. I can guarantee you that. I think that's definitely the wrong sport. But you play golf because you get a bit of fresh air. You play against yourself. And it's just about getting that ball into a hole 400, 500 yards away, right?
Yeah, interesting.
And it's just like you're just competing with yourself all the time and you forget about everything. All you care about is hitting that damn thing as hard as you can.
Can you?
And as straight as you can. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I feel like you just throw it and hope for the
best. Well, I mean, look, stick to being a market analyst and I'll stick to being a golfer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Predict one major market trend in the next 5 years. I would say less of a dollar in the financial market, less dollar. Is it going to be in the face of other currencies? I'm betting a bit on Australian dollar. Maybe it's going to be
Australian
good.
Dollar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just
why?
as strong a strong currency, not as popular.
Yeah.
The popular might be the yuan. I don't know. But I think maybe that's why we're moving more into digital currencies. Maybe there will be a currency that sums them all in a way.
What does it take to be a strong currency?
I mean, there's too many things that it depends what you mean by strong. Is it strong that it's more, it's the exchange rate is higher than other currencies? Or is it strong because too many countries accept it as...
Yeah.
What do you call it? Like a trade,
like a foreign exchange backup, like a reserve.
Yeah, that's probably still the US number one, but I think it's gonna go drop.
So, what is it about the Australian dollar that you think is potentially of interest?
Just now, on the shorter term, because they have high inflation, still sustainable, but they have really good economic data compared to other countries. So, higher rates for longer would make a currency stronger.
Okay, and what's the negative trend that you're seeing could happen in the next 5 years?
Stagnation in a way that we've never seen before.
In what way?
For example, I was checking, I don't know if you've heard, the market is up, the markets are booming, they are on all times high, right? That's what you're hearing.
Depends on who's saying it, but yeah, you hear
I mean the
that.
Numbers.
Yeah.
You know, NASDAQ, S&P, these major indices of the US economy, they're in all times high. But then just a couple of weeks ago, I'm working on that and I just tried to price it by gold. They're not doing that great. If you price the indices by gold.
Are you a believer in gold?
Yeah.
Have you bought gold?
Yes.
A lot?
Not as much as I should, but I bought it in a good price.
Yeah. And do you believe that gold is always going to... It's kind of one of those things where Bill would say real estate is a great investment, right? Generally speaking, especially in more mature markets. Is gold that... Does it give you that peace of mind that no other commodity does?
I mean, I don't want gold because I want to make money out of it. I want gold as a store of value, as you know, the cash that I'm not going to touch. Let it be gold. Okay. That's the concept.
Let's get into a bit of you. So, do you indulge in buying stuff? Do you treat yourself to nice things?
Not much. Honestly, if you want my personal opinion, I feel like I'm buying more than I have to and more than I need. But I'm saying not much compared to what I see others doing.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, in this region, if how people spend their money differs country to country. Is there cultural changes? Because in my opinion, Lebanese people love to look good, to dress well, to maybe overextend themselves financially versus others in the region who are a lot more modest.
Mm.
Maybe let's say the Jordanians. I'm saying anything. Mm. I don't know if that's the case or not. But do you see that as well from a market perspective where the economy represents the people?
I mean, yeah. Just I would tell you, if you would ask me, I would tell you I don't think I'm that into, you know, taking care of myself or whatever. But then I came full makeup and hair. I woke up early
did
and
the
I went
nails,
to do
did the hair, the
and,
lipstick.
You know,
yeah.
Shout out to my makeup artist. Can I do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I went there and I'm like, ugh, let me do my makeup. And I was like, oh, it looks really good.
Yeah.
So it is, I think it's just a small country. Everybody knows each other. The main focus is not your work or what it's, you know, what people think of you.
Yeah.
So by default, you would start to take care of these things.
Do you get stereotyped yourself based on how you look and the job that you do? Do people take you seriously?
I feel like sometimes it is. Not only that I'm a girl and I try not to take care of myself. On purpose sometimes.
You want to look bad in a way.
Yeah.
Deliberately.
Sometimes.
Why is that?
Because, I don't know, people judge, and especially before, now I don't care. Yes, that's from maybe, for example, TV channel perspective or a platform perspective. But from client's perspective, trust me, the more you help them to do money, they will like you.
Yeah.
Even if they hate me. And this is something I really like.
Money
you
talks.
Can hate me forever. You will love me because I'm going to help you do the right choice financially.
Yeah. Amazing.
And I feel like this is a universal language. No matter how much you hate me, you will like me somehow.
Yeah.
I'm helping you. Make money.
Do you play the card? Do you play the woman card? If there is a woman card, do you play it in the and to help you with your job?
I don't think I ever played it, but I'm not saying I'm so decent that I would never use it if I had the opportunity. Yeah. Maybe I'm gonna, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it never really happened.
Okay.
Maybe it happened without me knowing. Maybe it was like, we need a woman for this. So maybe.
Okay.
But I don't. I think if I want to compare, it definitely was worse than better.
But
who cares?
Yeah, we started at the beginning. I asked you about, as a woman being in this job, in this industry, are you outnumbered or not? So what would be the ratio of women in sort of the market analysis sort of world or the financial market world?
I don't know. It's really low, I think. But then again, you can see the women in financial sectors, they're doing really good. Lagarde, she is the head of the ECB. We have even the Russian Central Bank. It's a woman taking care of it, governing it. So I think there is more women because I think women really understand risk better. They don't have that ego that the white old dude have. Yeah. You know, like, nothing's going to happen in the market. Like, I think we understand that the focus is more on us and they're just waiting to point finger. So, yeah, that's it. But I mean, like, it's not like all women are great and men are bad.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, yeah. Who makes the financial decisions in your house? You or your husband? Look at that. That's him, 100%.
But there's no real decisions, like great decisions. He's the kind of guy who's more opinionated in life. So probably
does he take your opinion? Does he take your opinion on things?
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes that's your job, really.
Yeah, I don't. And sometimes even if I tell him something, he just will do it the opposite.
Should we do another ball? Yeah, like all right.
Rationalize the Lebanese economy.
How will you ever How can someone make sense of the Lebanese economy?
I'm
how do you rationalize
politics
it?
If I'm going to have to rationalize
you
it.
Can so talk I'm about anything you like, but it does for me from an outside look. I'm half Lebanese. Okay, as an outsider looking in. It doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense. But yet somehow, year after year, the economy sort of limps on and it hasn't completely crashed.
Yeah.
So how do you explain it? What's going on?
It is a black hole. But trust me, it is a black hole everywhere. It's just that people just still buying the headlines and the lies. So it's not like there's too many things related to only Lebanon and the situation in Lebanon. But then again, we're seeing this in too many different ways in too many different countries. And it just happens because whatever the dollar, for example, it has a value simply because people trust it. So maybe if people trusted the Lebanese bank and they didn't want it to take their money, things would have, you know, took more time to unfold. And that's why we say there is an issue in the U.S. We don't know when it's going to collapse because we don't know when it's going to unfold. The debt issue, for example, just raise the debt ceiling. Is that normal?
Mm.
Is that okay?
Mm.
I don't know. Mm. It's debatable. Mm. But in the U.S., in Lebanon, it's a bit different because there's politics involved. There are sanctions, indirect sanctions, because of the relationship between... Like, here's a bit more political things. But it's because of that. Sanctions on... the Syrian regime, but then the Syrian regime can really use Lebanon to do whatever. So then there's sanction on Lebanon, indirect one as well. You want to use Lebanon indirect way to get your money, we'll use an indirect sanction on it. So it was probably that. And, you know, war, all of these things that would make, you know, investors hesitant to come back to Lebanon. I believe it would have been an amazing place for financial services. It would have been even better than Cyprus. It would have been an amazing place. And we just, it was a lost opportunity.
Do you think it can ever be saved? And if it can, what will it need to take? What will need to happen for order for the economy in Lebanon to grow?
I don't know, because I would tell you there's major issues. If they go away, maybe things can happen. But then we had, it was there for too long that it became a way of life to not be ethical.
Yeah.
Anyway, everything is unethical. I'm just saying in an unethical world is the bare minimum where we don't even have it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think the only way is when you try to create opportunities where everyone make money. And imagine, it's always about money, and that's a sad but true thing.
Yeah.
So maybe if I would give this sector to a private company, then this private company cares about making money, then maybe they will bring me electricity. Maybe they will create good roads because they will make money out of it.
Yeah, so almost it needs to be privatized.
Selling the country, maybe.
It needs to be privatized. I mean, there was a famous report done, I don't know if you saw it, about how to save the Lebanese economy. did you read the report?
No.
It was done by, I think it was McKinsey.
Mm.
They talked about, you know, the Lebanese economy is in such a state that the only way that can save it is by selling some of their own natural products. Mm. And they were talking about weed, basically. They were talking about... Yeah. So it got to a point
where... It is
where
a source of income for some people. That's why they're not going to
But they were talking about it, saying, look, the country's in such a bad state, it's almost irreversible in so many different ways. Look, it's sad. It saddens me. But I think every year, it seems to just progress to be worse, right? And you think, where is the end? And just when you think it can't get any worse, somehow it will find that it does. But yeah, it limps on. And I've got a theory. I generally believe that you've got hyperinflation, you've got high levels of unemployment, right? There's not a lot of opportunity there to grow and develop. Lebanon as a country is being kept alive, economically speaking, on love.
Mm-hmm.
Love is the currency. Yeah, people outside who are sending money in, coming to visit, spending money whilst they're there because of their relatives and because of their love for the country. And that no one's really talked about that so much, but it's being run and managed on love.
But that's the romantic way to say it. But actually, it's education, because they are somehow well educated that they can go outside and work to send back money to the country.
Yeah.
So this is why at least let's try to keep the education system strong.
Yeah, that makes sense. I love that. Should we do another ball?
Yep.
How are you finding it?
So you've never been in, like, you never lived in Lebanon?
Never. Jamais. I used to visit, I still visit more or less every year. My parents, they live in Lebanon.
Mm.
I married a Lebanese wife.
You know, I was going to tell you where this is the Lebanese part of me.
I don't mind. So we're from the north. So my dad's from the north.
I'm from the north.
Yeah, where in the north?
Trablos.
Yeah. I'm more closer to Ehden side.
Ah, really?
Yeah. My mum is Italian, but she's learned Arabic for my dad as well, and she spent many years living in Trablos.
Really? Oh my god.
So if you speak to her now, you wouldn't really tell that she's Italian.
She have also the Trablos accent.
Actually, she does. Yeah, she 100% she does.
That's cute.
But no, I've never lived there, but I still feel something for that country, and it's important for my kids to feel connected. So they're only one and two at the moment. We want, my wife is going to be teaching them Arabic, so making them feel part of something. Because again, it's such a beautiful country that has just been hurt. It's been hurting for so long.
Yes. And I feel like sooner or later, I don't mind go living there as long as my career is not related to this country.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as it has nothing to do on how the means of my living.
So just to answer the question, how do you rationalize the Lebanese economy? How do you explain it? You said it's a black hole.
It's a black hole, and trust me, there's so many people benefiting because at the end of the day, it's money coming from outside. Some, I don't know, money laundering from here and there.
Yeah.
And there's, resources, as you said, some are benefiting from it.
So I like that word, resources. Very politically correct. I love that.
So I feel like there's always any country have resources, but the main thing is definitely the money coming from outside, the summer, the branding they're doing for the summer in Lebanon. It's true, but they're using it as much as they can.
If the airport shuts down, I think Lebanon shuts down. That's my take. Right, should we do another ball?
Okay, BRICS versus G7, who wins?
Okay, so the BRICS versus G7.
Because G7 has been on a classic model for so long and BRICS is just emerging, I would bet on the BRICS just because there's too many potentials, unexplored potentials, as the other side is a little bit either in a stagnation or probably would drop a little bit. So I would go with BRICS.
They have 35% contribution to the world's GDP.
Yeah.
G7 is roughly around 30%. So they're already contributing more to the world's GDP.
Imagine if they joined forces.
Yeah, but do you think, obviously Russia was a big swing, if you like, from G8 to BRICS. South Africa was obviously added relatively recently. Do you see any other countries, maybe Australia or any other countries that you think could be part of that new setup?
I think there would probably be at least a good relationship with the BRICS from the region and Arab countries. There was some discussion that Saudi Arabia and UAE, they were going to join, but I think at the moment it's just good relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Even some Latin countries, Asian countries, there is potential.
Yeah.
And they might have their own currency then later on, so.
Yeah. From all of the BRICS countries, which is the one that you think is the key driving force?
I think definitely it's China and Russia together.
Okay.
China is the producer. Russia is just a strong country.
Do you think the world is a better place now that you have BRICS versus just the original?
No, I'm not talking like good people versus bad people.
I know, it's not about good or bad, but it's talking about the economics of it, right? When you have one dominant force, such as the US dollar or the G8, the original G8, having an alternative in the markets is only a good thing.
Kind of, if I want to speak only from price perspective or competition perspective. But then again, also to be fair, there's too many restrictions that are ethical in G7 countries that are not in probably some of the BRICS. So I don't know.
Yeah, you got to marry them both, I guess. You got to sort of, you know, they both serve different benefits and purposes. Do you see that gap widening in terms of the contribution of GDP going forward? Do you see the BRICS countries continuing to grow and get stronger at the expense of G7?
I mean, I still want to bet that the G7, they are big countries and smart enough, especially if the U.S. is there. I always bet on how smart the U.S. policy is. I just told you, they turned the worst situation to the best. So I think it depends on who have the smartest people. I think, yeah, it's a possibility, but then I don't want to really believe that, you know, G7 is just like big monster and dying. Maybe they have other cards to play. But at the moment, I feel like the BRICS have really good opportunities to grow faster just because they're newer.
Yeah, and there's less restrictions, like you said.
Yes.
Big US elections coming up. What's that going to look like? What will another Trump world look like? And what will a Kamala Harris world look like?
I mean, for the economy, they really like Trump. The stock really like Trump. And if you see, like, he's the kind of guy who would tell you, in my days, the S&P did well, and then Biden came and he crushed the market, and this Kamala. And Kamala came, and he when we had this drop in August 5, he called it, it's Kamala's effect on the market. I feel like he's so lucky because he just came in a, it's not like him being the one who pushed the markets up. Maybe he is good with, you know, the tax for big institutions, maybe that's also helping. But he also came at a time where the markets are in a growth. It's a cycle. And you just came during a cycle where prices are going to get higher on some stocks. And, you know, the economy is kind of booming. So he used it. He could be a better option for the stock market because, you know, they believe that, you know, he's a businessman. He will help. Because at the end of the day, I think Trump, everything he cares about is his legacy, and he wants to leave a good legacy. So maybe even though I don't care and I'm not fighting for anyone, maybe I would have voted for him if I was a U.S. citizen, because the direct reaction of that might be good for the Americans.
Yeah, strong. He tends to. Whether it's make-believe, like you mentioned before, by economics, that confidence that he has. Obviously, the U.S. markets respond very, very positively to that. What would a Kamala Harris presidency look like for the world economy versus a Trump presidency?
I don't know, because she's also a very... It's a short thing, and she's just booming in a very short term. Like, it's been, what, 1 month or maybe a little bit more. So I don't know. I don't know how what it would look like. I'm just saying if it was the same as Biden's policy, which, by the way, whoever wins, I highly doubt there would be major changes between both, because the market is already in an extreme situation where changes are hard, whatever way you are going to go.
Yes.
I mean, like, what are you going to do with interest rate? They will drop. There's no other option.
Yeah.
You know, there's limited things that you can do. But I don't even know her, or I'd never seen her effect on the markets to even give an opinion about her, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting next couple of months. Mm-hmm. I think Trump, I mean, if you speak to anyone, they're all saying Trump's going to win. It's not even going to be close.
That's You're a UK citizen,
UK,
right?
Yeah.
What do they think of Trump? I feel like nobody likes him in Europe.
Look, he's the thing is, yeah, I can't speak on behalf of the UK people.
If but you what ever
I,
had this conversation.
But what I will say is that Trump is, he's box office, good and bad.
Yeah.
You never know what he's going to say or do next. So there's always this question of the unknown that's going to come out. But he seems to be seen as someone who knows how to make money and who's good at business. And because of that, the economy in the US responds. And because of that, there's a trickle-down effect to the rest of the other markets. Mm. So a strong US tends to help the UK in some degrees. But as an individual, as a person, I mean, he's just box office, good or bad.
Yeah, that's what I like about him. And have you seen this video? It's been years ago where he went to Germany and he sat down with them and they were giving him the most awkward look, like, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah,
and he was telling them, stop buying from Russia or we can grant you that.
Yeah.
And they were just looking at him like he's crazy.
Yeah.
And look how things turned out to be.
Yeah. Look, I mean, love him or hate him, the man's made a lot of money in the past, making a lot of smart decision making, but... We'll see. We'll see how it turns out. I the only thing that gives me some assurance that he's been there before, whereas Kamala Harris is a completely unknown quantity.
Yeah.
And putting that person in the most important position in the political world today, who's unproven, is going to be extremely unnerving for the markets, especially the financial markets. So that's my worry.
True.
She may be a better policymaker, domestic or international. We don't know because she hasn't done it before. So you can't
compare.
Whoever
plays the card of a woman as well, as we were talking about, like you will have to vote for me because I'm a woman.
I mean, the pressure she's under, it's because of that, on top of everything else, is a challenge. Yeah. But anyway, neither of us are political analysts and we can just observe. We'll get the popcorn ready and we'll watch the elections.
We can make money out of it.
We'll make some money out of it. Inshallah. Yeah, the next question. Let's do it.
Okay. The US dollar, to invest or to divest?
The US dollar, do we invest in it or do we divest from it?
You mean, do you buy?
Should we keep investing in the US dollar or do we move into other areas such as crypto, such as gold, such as whatever the case is?
I mean, the dollar is only strong when there's a collapse, because when there's a collapse in the stock market, you need cash. Cash will be king, that's what they say, and you need to, you know, to just cover your positions and like something like that. But will the dollar like turn stronger? I highly doubt it. Will be limited, even if it did. So, or are you asking me about, you know, treasuries, U.S. Treasury?
Maybe. I'm asking, as a normal person who's got a bit of money, should I invest more in the US dollar or should I move away from it and divest my money into other areas?
No, diversify always, and other currencies as well. As I was saying, maybe Australian currency is a good way also to diversify. But then, I don't know, are you going to just go exchange them and put them at home? I don't know how possible that is. This is why there's platforms like, you know, like trading platforms. Gold is a way also. Crypto always have a small, at least, I mean, check whatever is happening for big banks and hedge funds. They always tell you, well, crypto is bad and it's just for money laundering and shady work.
Of course, because they're scared the hell out of it. It's completely decentralized.
Then they buy the most.
Yeah, it's decentralized. That's why they're scared of it.
They said that, but they bought. They say that so you wouldn't trust it as an individual, but they're buying it.
Of course, because they know what they want to make money.
Yeah, so diversify. Okay. At least diversify. I'm not trying to tell you like, yeah, buy this, all your money, put it in. But I mean, if you buy gold and you buy dollar and euro, wherever is dropping, the other is going up. And that's at least you're keeping the value of your money.
Okay.
If you don't do anything, the value of your money is dropping.
You've got $100, right? What are you going to do with $100? Where are you going to invest it? How would you split it?
Okay, so that's my personal thing.
It's a tip. You're giving me a tip.
No, I cannot give tips.
Okay, you're not giving me a tip.
I'm not giving you a tip.
Yeah.
You just gave me $100 and you're forcing me to.
I'm pointing guns to your head, one of my weapons. Yes.
So I think now it's a bit, I would wait a bit for prices of gold to correct and I'm going to like maybe leave 40% in gold.
Okay, so 40 goes to gold. What's the remaining 60? What are we doing with it?
So they're all in the financial markets, or
it can be real estate. It can be crypto.
I would probably buy some real estate as well.
How much of the 60 is going to that?
20.
Okay, so you got 40 left.
Just because prices are high, that's the only thing. But I mean, I would. The main thing, I would be renting them more than anything. That's why I would buy real estate. So the other would be, let's say 20 in crypto.
Okay.
And the other 30 would be.
Oh, 20 left.
Oh, so. I removed 10 from another place, and I will leave 20 for the stock market.
Okay.
I know it's risky, but I will have the bigger share on China stock, especially the internet-related stock, electric car stocks in China, and the other in small companies here and there that I like in the US economy, India maybe.
Cryptocurrency, cryptic or crucial?
Okay, so what I mean by this, a lot of cryptocurrencies, thousands, I mean, I don't even know how many there are, right? A lot of it can be quite cryptic, which is mysterious. It's like, where do you go? Is it cryptic? Is it really that complicated? Or is it, would you say now it's a crucial part of anyone's portfolio?
The technology behind it is crucial. And that's why I was telling you maybe BRICS will move towards that. They would have their own digital currency. It is the future. But some currencies, I don't know how much they can survive. And I don't know if any would survive. I'm just betting on the fact that there's too many institutions behind it and hedge funds behind it. So yeah, probably that's why it's going to survive. But maybe there's a way also. There's always a better way to do a currency. Ethereum maybe is better than Bitcoin. In tech... The technology behind it. What else? Like, which ones? I think the tech behind them is nice enough.
So is it cryptic? Because it's very confusing. You don't know which crypto to back. Okay, you might have one or two main ones. You mentioned obviously a couple of them already, but there are thousands of others.
Yes.
And that's why it represents the biggest level of risk reward, right? Yeah. Because they still are relatively unknown. Mm. If you people want to get into the cryptocurrency to make money,
yes,
you're not going to go into
or find
good value. They want to get good value. Mm. So, you know, how would you choose a new crypto?
I'll tell you, to be very honest, just like the boom you saw, for example, in 2000, the internet, there was too many companies because it was a new thing and everyone wanted to jump on board. Then it filtered things or emerged.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe too many projects will merge eventually. So I think maybe if you want to go to short, like small projects, now you're trading. You want to benefit from a short momentum. Do that. But on the long term, yeah, obviously the bigger it is, the more market cap it has, it is more sustainable. And that's where you have to think as a store of value on the long term and use the small projects just as a trading opportunity.
Very nice. But you're a believer.
Not because I like it, just like it seems just too big, not too big to fail. It's a need. And the more that the US will use their weapon to you know, sanction things, they will create other ways to, you know, to fight that. And cryptocurrency is one of that ways. Yeah.
No, I'm with you. Pada, it's been great. It's been great chatting to you. You're a very unique individual in many ways. I love your viewpoints. They're very reassuring, but also refreshing because you're different in how you see things and how you view things, especially in relation to other people and the work that you do as well. And I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you for being part of the show.
Thank you for having me. And you really like know how to ask questions and get the conversation going.
Thank you.
I thought there would be a lot of awkward silence.
Yeah, really. wait, let's do it now.
Yeah. I think I would have been like, but no, it was really nice.
No, it's been great chatting to you. Look, I'm going to go buy a lot of Australian dollars right now. So thank you for the non-tip. I really appreciate it. And
you're welcome.
Look, we'll stay in touch. Maybe in the future we'll get you back on. We'll see how the predictions go with Trump and Miss Harris and see how that develops.
Yeah.
But I wish you all the very, very best.
Same to
Keep you. Breaking stereotypes. Keep being you. Don't worry about anyone else's opinion, which you don't anyway. So have fun with it. Have fun with it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure. Guys, please, and girls, please like, please subscribe. And thank you very much for watching The Inside Track with me, Luca Allam. Stay tuned for next week's amazing episode.